From the land of Grand University in Urbana-Champaign, Illinois, this is the Closing Market Report. It is the 29th day of September 2022. I'm Extension's Todd Gleason. On the farm again today in Logan County, Illinois, where the corn is still good and the moisture levels are great in that 19 to 20% area. And I am happy today because we're in the last day of our fund drive and we've been doing really, really well. And it's in part because of the ag audience. So give us a call, 217-244-9455, if you like to listen to the Closing Market Report and make your pledge of support to Illinois Public Media today, or go to willgive.org. Coming up in this half hour, we'll talk about the commodity markets with somebody else who's in the field today. That's Matt Bennett. He's at agmarket.net. And Mike Tenora will be here too from T-Storm Weather to discuss the harvest weather forecast for the month of October on this Thursday edition of the Closing Market Report from Illinois Public Media. It is public radio for the farming world.
Todd Gleason's services are made available to WILL by University of Illinois Extension.
Hey, do dial that number. It's 217-244-9455 or go to willgive.org. We're now joined by Matt Bennett from agmarket.net in Windsor, Illinois. I'll bet, like me, he is in the field today. Hi, Matt. How are you?
I'm doing good. Yeah, we're cutting beans here today.
Well, I'm in the grain cart and we're shucking corn, so we've got everything covered. And I think we have different colored equipment as well.
Yeah.
So we do have a lot of bases covered. Tell me about the beans in your area to begin with. How are things going for you?
Beans have been awfully good. You know, we've been very, very pleased so far with our bean yields. A lot of leaves, quite frankly, on some of these beans. They've been tough cutting. They're testing, but yet there's a lot of butter beans in them. So the ones that are dry, that are standing straight up, boy, they're dry as a bone, and you can't hardly bite into them. And then you got some butter beans there, and whenever you get right down to it, they blend in pretty well. But so it's been a little bit of a challenge, I guess, getting them cut, but very happy with the yield.
Matt is in Shelby County, and he is south of Champaign, about 45 miles. I'm about 75 miles due west of Champaign, Illinois. I'm in Logan County, and the corn here is very good, and it's been testing 19 to 20 all week long. Those first fields, there was one number that was 23, but not many bushels out of that one that we had to worry about. So I have some other questions for you related to this week. The market is up, I believe, today. Is that the case? Why is that? You and I, again, are talking earlier in the day. So what's happening?
Well, it's been interesting. You know, the dollar broke yesterday hard. You know, on the index, we were down over 1.5, which is a huge move. And so before you and I talked, we were down another 500 points or another half dollar, however you want to look at it, as we talk today. And crude yesterday rallied in tandem with the dollar being lower. You know, and then crude was up again this morning. And so whenever you see those two things going on, it gives you a chance, maybe even here in the thick of harvest, to be able to get a little bit of upside momentum. And so I guess from my vantage point, they're not big time rallies, but we're also not heading sharply south. So there's a couple of things to note, though. I do know that the river base is pretty much plunged today. I'm hearing that Kofco actually went to 50 under at St. Louis, which is a huge move lower. We're talking a 60 to 80 cent move lower. A lot of that's got to do with the fact that the rivers are getting almost unnavigable because they're getting, they're getting too low as far as being able to float a barge down them. So right now, I think that there's a lot of moving parts, but as a producer, we got to pay very close attention not only to what's going on with the board, but what's going on with our cash prices.
So many people will be running bushels across the scale that need to go into the elevator. How do they make the decisions for corn and soybeans as to whether they store it there or not?
Well, that's a tough call. I know a lot of folks have stuff contracted, first of all. And so I think the big question is, what do you do with the stuff that's not contracted and that you're not storing at home? So, you know, as far as what we're hauling across the scale, we've been going ahead and spotting it. The kind of bushels that we're looking at, we feel pretty strongly that, these price levels are awfully good. If a person wants to stay long, there's a whole host of things that we can do and still participate in an upward market. But by all means, I don't want to be in a situation where I'm trying to get too bullish with $14 bean sitting here in front of us, and corn prices that are still within 30 cents of $7.
What are the friendly fundamentals for both corn and soybeans, and if there are bearish ones?
Well, stocks, the stocks situation. And so we're going to find out a heck of a lot more about, what were the ending stocks whenever it all came down to it. Was the USDA right at 1.525 and at 240? I happen to think that those stocks levels are tighter than that. A big reason that I think that, of course, is looking at basis around the countryside here over the last, 3 or 4 weeks. And I think that, some of these originators have really been scrambling to secure supplies on out farther. And that's not just here at home, but in other parts of the country. So, west of Mississippi, we're in this grain flow that's going to have to occur from east to west. And what that's going to do is, that rising tide is going to lift all boats. So I've got to think that moving forward, you're going to see some really interesting basis levels that have a large impact on producers, those are the bullish things. As far as the bearish things, yes, we're entering the harvest. I do think there's some better corn out there than what people were expecting. Now, that would probably be Illinois, Indiana type conversations and part of Iowa, but there are some other areas where it's not as good. So I think you've got bullish and bearish influences. But the last thing I'd say is you cannot discount what's going on in the macro market. So, the Dow is down 500 points before you and I talked. A lot of unrest there, a lot of uncertainty. You've got cooling down the Chinese economy, and of course, there's world recession fears.
Okay, thank you very much, and have a good day on the combine. Be safe out there.
Absolutely. Thank you, bud.
That is Matt Bennett. He is with agmarket.net. 217-244-9455 is the number to dial. Your support of the ag programming here or willgive.org on our last day of the fall fun drive. Over the decades, even the centuries here in the United States, across the planet, farmers have worked towards sustainability. In the early 1900s, there were books written, one that I liked called The Farm That Won't Wear Out, about how to put a farm together so that it would not wear out. And sustainability, regenerative agriculture, are the new buzzwords across the industry. And not only farmers are involved, but the big life science companies, places like Bayer and Corteva, even Syngenta, have been working towards these sustainability goals, and they have people in place responsible for sustainability. In fact, Syngenta's Liz Hunt is the head of sustainable and responsible business for Syngenta North America. I asked her to tell me a little bit about her job and responsibilities.
Yeah, sure. So all of our sustainability goals for the company are under the umbrella of our Good Growth Plan. And we really have four key areas of commitments there. One is around accelerating innovation for farmers in nature. So Syngenta at its heart is an R&D company. So this works really well for us to be able to look for what are some tools, technologies that can help to move the peg forward for climate smart, sustainable types of outcomes. So we have committed a significant amount of R&D dollars over a five-year horizon for our Good Growth Plan to kind of measure success against that. Working with farmers on striving for carbon neutral agriculture is another commitment. Within that are things like, advancing soil health, working on biodiversity projects with farmers through Operation Pollinator primarily, and then commitments against our own operations as well for reducing our footprint as a company. Working with helping people stay safe and healthy, whether that's within our operations or our seed production sites, which are global, producing seeds from, marigolds to corn and soybeans, so quite a broad spectrum, and then working with farmers around the world on safe use and stewardship of our products. And the one that probably excites me the most is partnering for impact, so looking for where there's on the ground initiatives that we can work together with different organizations to kind of advance and learn from each other. If I've learned one thing in sustainability, you cannot do this alone. You need to work really closely with other partners. So that's been kind of fun to work through.
Government relations has to be fairly important. I don't know how much the Inflation Reduction Act will have changed or impacts what you are thinking about going forward. But a lot of the carbon market side has been in not in the government functions. The government wanted to be there, wanted this to happen, but really it's developing within the industry. Can you kind of tell me about the juxtaposition of the two and how you handle that? And I need just the basics of what's happening at this point, because it really is just beginning to develop.
At the end of the day, when we look at, you know, the Inflation Reduction Act, obviously more money is going towards some of those and our USDA NRCS programs to help to scale and advance conservation agriculture, which I think is fantastic. And, you know, provides another opportunity for folks to access funding to try new things or to expand some of the work that they're already doing. From a carbon market perspective, you rightfully pointed out it's a voluntary market. It is not a mandatory market right now, aside from things like the California Air Resource Board type of marketplace. But what I see is an emergence of, you know, some carbon markets and some carbon programs and offers across the landscape for farmers to investigate and participate in if it's something that makes sense for them.
How does Syngenta work with farmers at the moment within that carbon market spectrum?
Sure. So Syngenta does not have a carbon market offer. We focus on enabling farmers and grower choice for farmers. So we have a suite of digital tools that allow farmers to keep robust records at a field level. And those records, kind of regardless of the marketplace that you would choose to participate in or program that you may choose to participate in, are going to have the same fundamental data requirements. So allowing farmers to maybe multi-purpose their data that they would use to manage their operation, understand their ROI, understand their productivity, meet compliance reporting, you know, those data that they're keeping could also be used for carbon markets should they choose to participate. So we see ourselves more as an enabler in that space and allowing growers to make the choice that makes sense for them.
Have you been working with other industry partners and the government to make that data interoperable between systems so they don't have to input twice or three times or five times?
Yeah, so we have worked in a couple of places with organizations like Field to Market and the Cool Farm Alliance, which both have calculators. Field to Market has their Field Print platform and Cool Farm Alliance has their Cool Farm tool. So we have built APIs to both of those calculators to enable farmers to more easily meet those requirements if they're working with a company that has that requirement, or if they're conservation curious and want to look a little bit deeper, they can certainly do that and use their data and not have to enter it once. I think we all know nobody likes to enter data any more than they need to. So trying to simplify that process for them.
How do you protect the data? Is it available to be gathered up all as one set of series across the board without any identifiers so research can be done on it? Can it be given permission from the producer or the landowner be used with the identifiers on it? What kinds of things are within that data realm? Who does it belong to? How do people get paid to use it? Those sorts of things.
Sure. So Syngenta has a robust data privacy policy and pledge that all of our digital tools adhere to. So farmers do own their own data in our programs. Our farm management software, which is CropWise Financials, does have a permissions-based system. So they can choose who can enter data for them, who they can share it with and things like that. And they manage that. That's not something that we manage for them. So focused on permission-based and following our data privacy and pledge, which is available for farmers to take a look at on our website.
How do you see this developing over time? Is there a path forward that's easy to understand, or is it so new that it's still difficult?
So I do think sustainability will become part of doing business in the future. I think it's a great time for farmers to start to, you know, look at sustainability of their operation. I do want to emphasize that, you know, while, you know, carbon markets or some of these calculators can seem overwhelming at first, it's not necessarily, you don't have to start at the deep end of the swimming pool. You know, we have put together tools and technologies for farmers who are conservation curious and just want to start walking into the shallow end of the sustainability swimming pool. So tools like our CropWise Sustainability that we launched this year, which has a sustainability standard in it, super easy for farmers to go in, spend 30 minutes answering a series of yes, no, check all that apply questions, and start to see where they're leading against sustainable outcomes on their operation. And then maybe start to look deeper at sustainability over time. But, you know, it's a great place to get started. I think if we can get more people, you know, started down the path of looking at sustainability, we'll see greater action over time. So you don't have to start hard. You don't have to start diving into the deep end of the swimming pool. You can start wading in and start to learn something and see what makes sense for you and your operation. It's not a one-size-fits-all solution.
Liz Hunt is the head of sustainability and responsible business for Syngenta North America. You're listening to the Closing Market Report from Illinois Public Media. I hope you have donated in this final day of our fall fund drive sometime during this week. But if you have not yet, this is a perfect time to do that. 217-244-9455 or willgive.org. Again, 217-244-9455. Or WILLAG.org. We have been on the air here at Illinois Public Media for 100 years. The very first broadcast was about agriculture, and I suspect that the very last broadcast will be about agriculture sometime in the far distant future. But we're here now talking about agriculture, and if that makes a difference to you, 217-244-9455 is the number to call, or willgive.org. Agriculture is the largest industry in the state, and we try to make sure that here we're giving information out that is important and pertinent and makes a difference in your bottom line. If it does, 217-244-9455 is the number to call, or go online at willgive.org. willgive.org. Hey, don't forget to dial that number, 217-244-9455, or go to willgive.org to make your pledge of financial support to Illinois Public Media for the agricultural programming. We're now joined by Mike Tenura. He's at tstorm.net. That's T-Storm Weather. Hey, Mike, thanks for being with us on this beautiful harvest day. Producers, I believe, across the whole of the Midwest are likely to be out. Can you tell me about conditions today and what you see for the next week or so?
Yeah, well, there's going to be fantastic weather for harvesting over the next week or two. There's very little rain in the forecast because we have several areas of high pressure that are going to continue to pass. And that will keep things very dry across all of the central United States. So great news for corn and soybean harvesting. The only concern we have with this is that out in the plains, it's been pretty dry in Kansas and Oklahoma. These two states account for a lot of U.S. wheat production, and we're planting at the moment, but we're planting in very dry conditions. In fact, the coverage of dryness on expected U.S. hard red winter wheat production is the highest today in at least 10 years, going all the way back to 2012 for the end of September. So we need to see some good rains, but there's just not much coming up. And that's going to create a situation later next month where farmers are really going to need rain out in the plains. And we don't think there's going to be much over the next couple of weeks. And if recent history continues, that'll last right into November. So that is something to watch.
Have you thought about what the rest of this month looks like? Is there any indication, really, of what I'm asking, whether these dry conditions out west or in the Midwest will change very much?
Well, it's always difficult to say what the weather is going to do more than a couple of weeks out. In the situation that we're in now, we can see with a fairly high level of confidence that there's just not much rain, if any rain, coming up over the next 10 days. we can probably stretch that out to another 4 or 5 days, which takes us into the middle of October. But once you get to that point in time, there's a lot of things that can change. And one of the interesting things about the month of October is that temperatures drop very rapidly from the start of the month through the end of the month across the Midwest. And that always starts to create situations where it doesn't take a whole lot to create a new weather pattern. So right now, we just don't want to say a whole lot about weather beyond October 15th.
What do you see in South America at this time?
Well, Argentina is in a somewhat similar situation. Over the last 5 months in the key wheat region, they're in the middle of their third driest period going back to 1979, so one of the driest of the last 40 or 50 years. And there's not much rain coming up. We'll see some showers in the wheat belt of Argentina next week and even more than once next week. But the thing to keep in mind is that 1.5 to 2 inches of rain is normal every 2 weeks at this time of the year. And we're looking for totals of only around 0.5 inch or maybe 1 inch if we're lucky. So if we're in the drought and we only get half of normal rainfall over the next 2 weeks, that means that we're still in the middle of a drought in the middle of October. And that's a concern because their wheat starts to turn sensitive. And we know that dry conditions and then dryness at the key period of development would lead to a loss in yields. So that'll be something to watch as well.
Anything from Russia or other places across the planet?
Well, Russia has the opposite problem, and so does Ukraine. They've had a lot of rain over the last couple of weeks and going all the way back into August. So they needed to dry out so they can harvest all of their corn and sunflowers and also get all of the wheat planted. So at the moment, they need it to dry out. It is going to rain more there over the next few days because an upper level system is moving across the eastern EU. Once that exits early next week, it should turn drier, so it looks better for them for planting and harvesting going forward. But if they turn wet around the middle of October, that'll be a problem because their climate turns a lot colder very quickly over the last half of next month. And if we start bringing rains into wet conditions, that'll just create another story there for wheat. So there's a lot of things going on with that crop at the moment. The one thing to keep in mind, though, is Australia's looking great. They've had cool weather over the course of their wheat season, and they've been getting some good rains, and that'll take them right into harvest, most likely. In Brazil, it's been raining as well. We're having an early start to the rainy season, and that'll help to kick off corn and soybean planting without too many problems. So those are kind of the main issues that we're watching here at T-Storm Weather.
Hey, thank you much, Mike.
Yeah, great being here, Todd.
That is Mike Tenner. He's with T-Storm Weather. Find them online at tstorm.net. You've been listening to the Closing Market Report from Illinois Public Media. It's public radio for the farming world. And be sure to visit willgive.org or dial 217-244-9455 to make your pledge of financial support to the agricultural programming that comes to you from Illinois Public Media, from the farm field in Logan County, Illinois. I'm University of Illinois Extension's Todd Gleason.